Action! Oh, sorry, we're rolling?
We are.
Damn! I wanted to get me into the... Anyhow, welcome to the Angle Podcast. I'm with my man right here.
Yeah,
what a lazy fist bump. Proper one, yeah, come on.
The angle's not right.
This is the right angle. We have a special guest in the building, Thabo Tsolo. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I would be doing better if I was seated, had some breathing space here.
Your camera angles aren't right here. Yeah.
Yeah, so this man is invading my space. I need some social distancing here.
For sure.
Thanks for making the time, man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Scadio.
Cool. Well, yeah, so today we're chatting to Thabo. I suppose we've crossed paths a little bit over the last few years. I think I initially spoke to you, we were deep in COVID. That must have been 2020 or so. For some reason, I was at work. I shouldn't have been, but anyway, I was at work. And we were talking about your game Doba Dash at that time. So yeah, today we just want to chat to you a little more about, you know, a few years down the line, you've created a, you know, you got a sort of a stable, at that time it wasn't stable, but you've now created a stable game development studio. You've got a team around you, you've got some funding. So yeah, maybe just tell us a little more about yourself and your opening into...
He's got funding?
Yeah, we're going to talk about it. Yeah, we're going to talk about it. So yeah, maybe just give us an intro about yourself and your early introduction into games and your decision to get into the scene.
See, thanks, Scott. Yeah, so where do I start? Okay, so for me, I feel so old right now.
Wow, don't expose your age, man.
You're still not very young to me, man.
I actually was on a game TV show, and the kids were hosting the show, and they kept calling me uncle, and I was like, damn, my niece and nephew don't even call me uncle.
Damn.
So it was like, it burned. But yeah, so my story, how I started this company or went into game design, pretty interesting. So I've always wanted to tell stories from a very young age, you know, like, and I wasn't even like exposed to gaming until I was like in high school. So I got like my first PlayStation when I was in high school, but I used to play mobile games on my mom's phone or my dad's phone. That was like my genesis, playing like games on Gameloft, you know, like your Prince of Persia, those type of games. But I always used to like play with my toys and like create like stories around that. And I've always wanted to tell stories that people can engage with beyond my toys or beyond like any other medium that I had access to at the time. But also I had a problem because when I was in high school, we were picking like careers, and I wanted to do architecture because I thought that would get me respect, like in the family and stuff. You know, in black homes, you get chicken at funerals if you like rank higher instead. So I was chasing that, but my marks weren't that
good.
You
didn't want the salad at the funeral.
I didn't want the salad, or you know, or stand in line. I wanted to go in the house and get a plate. You know, but my marks weren't that good. But I still wanted to do architecture. So yeah. I was like, okay, how do I do it without the marks, you know? And I started learning more about animation. I also was a big animation fan. I grew up on like Disney, still a fan of Lion King till this day, and Tarzan. But
Tarzan?
Yeah, I used to walk on
I like that.
On my fingers. Yeah, yeah, like it's wild, yeah. And then, yeah, I learned a lot about animation, and the guys at City Varsity came to our school, and they were giving out like they portfolio in the courses and stuff. Yeah. And I saw, okay, animation is a bit of architecture because you can model or build buildings. Yeah, it's like, actually, maybe I could do that. And then somewhere down the line, I could maybe tap into the architecture space. And then, and I'll be hitting two birds with one stone because I'll be doing an animation and game design, which is the story element that I'm passionate about, and I can hopefully down the line do an architecture. And then I went into gaming and animation. I studied that, and I learned more about gaming and how to make games, and I realized that actually this is where it's at. There's no other medium or platform that can tell stories quite as good as game design, you know, because you can fully immerse your players and create like paths for them to choose and like
Right.
You know, it gives them so much depth.
Yeah.
Unlike any other medium out there, you know. And then, yeah, that's where it started. And then fast forward to when, like, 2019, I got a call from a friend of mine who was like, yo, man, there's this big opportunity. I just got back from Germany doing
my own. You got back from Germany?
Yeah, so I was, like, working with the Goethe on the project that they were working on. And then they flew us out to promote this game. And they were like, come through, this opportunity is once in a lifetime. You can start your own business. You'll get funding for this business.
Ah.
And you can make games. They're looking for the next big gaming studio. And we're incubated at Simulhong. 2019. And, yo, it was crazy, man. Like, high intensity, high pressure situation. The team was big. There was, like, 7 of us. And we broke down into 5. You know, I always say this, like, the team got smaller, but the vision got clearer.
Right.
And we were able to form what you see now as Space Setter Studios, you know. And the name came about because of how big the team was. We were different creatives. So they were looking at building the next big gaming studio, but there weren't any black game designers at the time or they could find, you know.
Nice.
And they had to find other people in the creative space. And that's why they looked out for me, because I was the known game designer at the time. And yeah, we wanted to create out of this world content with the different creatives that were in, and that's where the name Space Salad came about.
An interesting name, Space Salad.
Yeah, a lot of
people. Is there salad in space, or is there space in the salad?
You can play around. But, from the name, I recently learned that they're growing salad in space.
Ooh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, but that's how the name came about.
An interesting name.
So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of the immersion of games. I mean, these days I don't play as many games as I would like. It's just that's an adulting thing and a time thing, I guess. But nevertheless, I'm still very interested in games.
For sure.
And my interest in games was, it's kind of like the best medium for just combining so many different forms of storytelling. So there's the multimedia elements. Of course, I've got a background in multimedia. So there's storytelling. There's writing. There's really good, beautiful visuals, but there's also really interesting technical aspects that get involved with the gameplay. Like, your immersion is really interesting. And that's kind of partly why I'm interested in the space so much, and that's why I'm interested so much in the XR space as well, because the guys doing work in there are also just kind of on the edge, you know. They're combining so many different aspects of what's available to them, from a storytelling perspective, from, like, production perspective, from technical perspectives. I mean, these guys are what you call creative technologists, and I'm always really impressed by creative technologists, because they do stuff I definitely can't. But I would. It's just really talking to them, because they're kind of on the edge. And that leads me into my next issue. So there's a project I chatted to you about. Must have been last year. Poo Weekly.
Yeah.
POO.
Wait, what?
POO. It's like, well, we say Poo Weekly, but it's Point of Order, right?
Yeah.
And what was interesting about it was, and I'll give you a chance to just kind of tell us more about that particular project. But I was interested in, because I was in a space where I wanted to do more writing about games, local guys doing games. But there's often not a story around it. Like, there's, okay, people are making games, okay, fine, you know, whatever. I was working in, like, a national paper at the time, so it was like, you know, what was the context for me to actually be writing about this particular game? But your ideas about storytelling that you just brought into it, which was that Poo Weekly was, it kind of touched on a particular mood of the time, which was an election year. You had, like, all our politicians as characters in the game. But interestingly, you also partnered with a very nationally famous or well-known political cartoonist, Zapiro.
Yes.
And there's a bit of a story around that. And I like those kind of collaborations, in the sense you get guys that don't normally work in games getting involved with guys making games.
For
Maybe
sure.
You tell us a little more about that, how that came about. Or
dope. Poo Weekly, which is an acronym for Point of Order, just to clear things up. And yeah,
point
it was
of order.
Yeah, Point of Order.
And yes, Che.
I'm sure you can already make the connection.
To the parliament.
Yeah. So it was a response to the elections, and more so a response to the decline in youth voters.
Right. Right.
You know, the youth doesn't vote anymore for various reasons, and we wanted to create something that connects with the youth and also informs them about politics, their political leaders, and kind of encourages them to vote, you know, because we wanted to create a product that creates empathy for our leaders, you know, because it's easy for us on the ground to say, you know, these guys are not doing enough.
Or, right, right.
But we don't understand what it takes, or the decisions that they make might work for me, but might not work for you, you know, even though we voted for the same guy. So we created this game called Pool Weekly, which is a 2D beat-em-up game.
Who what?
2D beat-em-up.
What is beat-em-up?
Like Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. I don't know if you remember the game, Master.
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
So you pick your favorite political leader.
Okay.
And then you pick a policy. You choose between two policies. So for the demo that we built, you have to choose between load shedding. Oh, it's a power crisis, and a South African power crisis. And you have to choose between load renewable energy or coal mining to generate electricity. And each whatever decision you make, whatever policy you pick, you face the monsters or the enemies of that specific policy.
Oh.
And
so Julius Malema would go coal, Helen Zille would go green energy.
Well, you can mix and match. It doesn't matter who you choose. The point is to show you that whatever decision you make can have a positive and negative effect on society. Okay. You know, like with renewable energy, it's good for the environment, but it's expensive for low-income households, you know.
And does the impact of the decisions play out in the game?
Yeah, we have, like, cutscenes that show you, like, once you've defeated the coal monster, it tells you that, oh, you're successful.
And the coal monster is a political character?
No. So we didn't want to break the law here. We didn't We made sure that we don't paint any political leader in a bad light or anything like that. So we made sure that we've personified the social ills that we face in South Africa. Okay. So you have we've designed this archangel that's like stands for renewable energy, and then you have to beat him up. And then there's like a coal monster who lives underground, which is some big fat vampire looking like monster, and then you have to beat him up too. So he mentioned that we collaborated with Zabiro on this one. So that's also an interesting story, because back in high school I used to draw political cartoons.
How old is Zabiro?
He's in his 60s.
60 something.
Yeah.
Damn. And he's still at it.
Yeah. He's cool, that guy.
Yeah.
He's top.
How did that collaboration come about?
So I used to draw political cartoons in high school, and I used to draw my teachers, and I used to get into trouble for that. So, but you know, that's all fun and games.
Yeah.
But I've always, like, again, wanted to tell stories, and I always had like a political background because of my family. And I reached out to him when we started the business. This was in 2021, around there, when we worked on the first edition of Pool Weekly, which we showcased at Comic Con, and like the response was great, you know.
Nice.
And then I reached out to him back then, sent him a couple of emails. I think I sent him emails for about 2 years, just asking him to collaborate.
2 years?
2 years.
Damn.
And then I saw he was doing a tour for his book signing. He came through to Rosebank, and I was like, this is where I'm going to get him. And we're still working on the updated version of Pool Weekly. And then I reached out to him, and I was like, hey, man, please sign my book. And then I started showing him my work, and I spoke to him about the emails. Did he get them? And he's like, yeah, I did. Actually, I told him to get back to you, but I don't know why my assistant get back to you, you know. So there was a lot of things happening. And he was like, yeah, I like what you guys are doing. Let's meet up in Cape Town. He invited us to his studio, his place, actually, in Camps Bay. So we went down there and we...
Camps Bay. Political cartoon pays off, son.
I guess.
Imagine a cartoonist could live in Camps Bay.
And he's been doing it for a while now, so you can only imagine. And we were hanging out at his place, and he's just showing us like his memorabilia, the work that he's done. And he was like, how do I plug in? And we're just starting to discuss how do we work together. And I guess the rest is history.
I think collaborations are so important, actually, particularly in the little small developing scene that is game dev in South Africa and the extended continent. I think there's scope for it, with musicians, with other designers, artists. There's all kinds of like cool stuff to do. The stuff they're missing, like those guys in those other industries are missing, is that technical aspect of how to make it happen, which is like game dev guys can bring in the storytelling. I was going to jump into another question, unless you have one.
Nah, go ahead.
So I do want to get into the beast that is local game dev a little bit, because I talk about it a lot. I like chat to lots of guys about it. I'm very interested in the scene for some reason.
He's obsessed.
So maybe you can just tell us a little bit about how you're approaching your studio, like your sustainability of your studio. It's not easy to make a commercial success of a game dev studio here. Or anywhere, really. I mean, it's difficult anywhere you are. But your access to market obviously changes where you are in the world. And South Africa's market is a little bit small. So maybe just talk to us about how you're approaching it and what experiences you've had there.
Yeah, it's been a rough, it's our sixth year.
Sixth year.
Yeah, so.
Been at it,
you know, growing day by day, learning new lessons every day. You know, it's not easy, like Scott has mentioned, you know, and a lot of guys that we started out with are not around anymore, you know. And how we were able to sustain ourselves when I met Scott back in 2020, we weren't making any money at all. You know, we were literally living off of competitions that we won and accelerated programs. And then last year, we got approached by an investor by the name of Aeons Creative Technology. Shout out Mitch. He's the founder or co-founder of the venture fund, and he's one of the co-founders of Ozo. So I met him at so you can do the math in your head.
Right.
I met him at a telecom event, which we were also being awarded for the work that we do. This was the year before last.
Okay.
Yeah. And then last year was when we signed the deal. Okay. You know, but he reached out to us and he was like, I'm looking for a game dev studio. Are you guys interested? And then he did everything in the back. And yeah, like, I guess the rest is history. I don't want to go into too much detail on how the deal worked, but he just believed in us and he saw that this is something that...
What I mean is like, we don't need to go into the details of that particular relationship. I mean is when you're thinking about your studio as the CEO of Space Isle Studios... When you're looking ahead, funding, of course, is useful for you. I mean, it would be useful for anyone. It'd be useful for us, quite frankly.
Thank you.
But, are you, in terms of your developments and how you're approaching sustainability, are you just want to do, like, the games that you want to do, or are you looking at sort of corporate games? Like, how are you working at the market so where you can build things?
All right. So as far as... what we want to do as a company to sustain ourselves, as I mentioned, it was based mostly on competitions and like accelerated programs, but we had to shift. And thanks to the investor, we were able to learn more about the business side of the gaming space. And we realized that there's a lot of, as much as it is small, it's an untapped market. You know, there's a lot of people that are looking for like gaming solutions or the technical part of like collaborating with studios like you mentioned, Scott. And that's like now our new business approach, where we want to collaborate with studios, shows. Our motto, our vision is to gamify everything until there's nothing left. And that's why you see like some of the collaborations we've done. We recently worked with Tropica Island of Treasure, the reality show, where we gamified, we turned the games that they play in the show into like video games that contestants can play, and that was really successful. So that's like our new business model, where we basically make games for businesses as well.
Yeah.
Whoever's interested in gamifying their solutions, whether it's education, whether they're trying to get data for their events, increase their engagement. We've seen, and the studies have shown, that gamification has a higher higher percentage in engagement via your users and getting your audience, more than social media, actually. I think it's probably the biggest competitor to social media, because everyone's on their phone. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, that's like the one thing that competes with social media in terms of getting people's attention. Yeah, so that's the new business model that we're exploring. And it's been pretty good. It's just now convincing the South African market that this is something that they could use, you know, because as much as gaming is big, a lot of people are still afraid, and there's not a lot of examples or a lot of studios that are doing it. I could mention like Sea Monster, but they do it more in the banking space, and you know, like with Pick and Pay and stuff, but those are like not brands that people can associate with.
That's a scary picture though. So, but I think it's a constant theme around startups in South Africa, that in your early stages, you almost have to depend on grant funding and money that you get from competitions and accelerator programs.
Yeah.
Now, what happens? How long can you ride that wave, would you say, in the gaming industry until you go an investor has to come in? And could this be the reason why the guys that you started with possibly are no longer there because they rode that wave to a particular point and no investor pitched up for them? But
Sure.
how long can they just keep entering competitions for sustainability? I wouldn't
Yeah.
imagine that's quite sustainable
For
for a business.
sure.
How long would you say, as a startup in the gaming sector, how long would you ride that wave?
How long you'd ride that wave is dependent on your team, you know. I
Okay.
think for us, I've been blessed to have a team that I have currently because it was hard. I won't
Right.
lie to you, like even just learning how to work as a team, learning what type of games we make, finding what sets us apart from like the rest of the gaming
Right.
industry, besides being black, you know, because at the time we were the only one of the only black studios, you know, one of the only black people in the space, you
Right, and I'm
know.
sure you could only ride that wave to a particular point as
Yeah,
well.
and we didn't want to ride because there was times where we used to get we used to win competitions for like diversity, you know, and
Right,
that's
right,
like for
right.
me, I feel like it's the
It's
worst.
not a real win.
It's not a
Yes,
real win. Like I
right.
win because I'm black, so we had to
Yeah.
keep pushing the envelope. And I can't really speak for other studios, but I think for me, if it
Yeah.
wasn't for my team and us working together, motivating each other, some of the context we also got, like I think once we left Timolokgong, we got approached by a mentor of ours
Okay.
who's he's a Nigerian film director. He gave us a place to stay, you
Huh.
know, to use as an office space so we can all come together and
Right.
work. And we've been getting like those kind of like favors where people
Right,
reached
right.
out because they saw the work that we were doing, you know, they loved the attitude, they liked
Your work ethic
the
and
work
stuff.
ethic, you
Right.
know. So people, you know, like the saying, it takes a village to
To
raise.
raise a kid.
Yeah, I think
Right.
that's our how we were able to sustain ourselves for this long because
Sure.
not getting any money or not making any revenue for 5 years will kill a business, you
Right.
know.
And at what point did you realize that you could go services and products? I would imagine when you create the games, they'll be more like products.
Yeah.
And when you do animation projects for like a corporate, that would be
For
like a
sure.
service.
For
So now
sure.
the business is almost branching into products and
For
services.
sure.
But at what point did you realize, okay, this is a good sustainable model for the business to create products this site and still offer services to clients that may need the service?
So when we realized that product wasn't working for us anymore was when we released Hot Buns, you know.
Go on, you're busting to talk about Hot Buns. Just talk about it. Just talk about
Yes.
it.
So,
Hold up, hot
yeah.
buns didn't work?
Hot Buns didn't work.
The
Yeah,
hell?
contrary to popular belief, it didn't.
Maybe just give some. Tell us what Hot Buns is and,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah, this is a
No,
game.
but when you finish that train of
Yeah.
thought, you should have written about hot buns. Why didn't you write about
I
hot
didn't
buns?
write about Hot Buns. This guy.
But I guess it's pretty like out there. But
Right.
when we released Hot Buns, and it was a test for us because we were like working on a lot of prototypes, so we were prototyping a lot, and most of those games were they had a lot of attention, but they weren't making any money because they weren't fully finished and we weren't releasing them. So we were like,
Okay.
okay, let's take a chance on Hot Buns, let's work on it, let's finish it. We did everything from self-publishing,
Right.
developing the whole game, putting it out on Steam, even working on a mobile version. And we did also the marketing. We did like skits, we did radio interviews, we did tours, we put it on like showcases all around the world. And yeah,
And it didn't work out.
it didn't work out. And that's the gaming industry in
Yeah.
a nutshell, globally. Like you're successful in your third game, you know, that's like the trend.
Right.
Yeah, after your third official release.
What was your business model in hot buns? What how were you going to make money off of hot buns?
Premium sales. So we'll have the game, we'll sell it
Direct,
as
yeah,
like,
direct
yeah,
salesman.
direct sales. So
No,
yeah, per
okay.
copy.
All
And it
right,
wasn't even
well.
going for that much. It was like $8 a piece. So
That's the
it
thing
was.
with making games. It's like it takes loads of upfront capital, but not just capital, time. Like it takes
Time,
time to
for
make a good
sure,
game,
for
like
sure.
years.
Like.
Just a quick side point. We'll get back to Hot Buns, but a quick
Hey,
side
man.
point. So when I was chatting to Sugar and Ben about Semblance many years ago, back in they launched in when did they launch that? Early 2018, I think they actually launched it. But I'd been chatting to them numerous times before that. And like, yeah, okay, fine. They're in their parents. They had a room at their parents' place. They had, you know, they cut costs. Ben did full time. Sugar did full time. And it was a good game. Samlins was a good game. It looked good. It was polished. It was unique. It was, you know, they also went out to all the little conventions. They punted it. And it was, by all intents and purposes, it was just a good, solid production.
For sure.
Not successful commercially. Mm. And it was like, even then they had the marketing thing of being the first African game on Nintendo Switch at launch. So they had like little marketing punts in that, but still it wasn't successful. Mm. So, I mean, that just goes to show. I mean, you just don't know. You can put your heart and soul in something.
For sure.
When you get guys that just, they get famous off the first game. It's just the way it is in creative. It's in creative space. It's just it's a miss, you know.
Hit or miss, yeah.
So anyway, that's also why I really like the space, because it's like there's something in indie game developers. It's like I equate it to like an artist in most respects, in the sense that you've got to be, there's a certain level of commitment and sort of stubbornness required to actually make it work, because
it must be intense, man.
No, exactly, because you can be. You can be an artist, like you can sit there starving, and if you're an artist, you don't care. You just, all you want to do is do your art.
For sure.
And you've got to have the same sort of mindset almost with any game.
For sure, 100%.
So it's always interesting to follow the journey, because it's like you're dealing with, there's a certain character to it that
100%.
And I still have to pay your bills. Damn it!
Yeah. I still have to pay my bills.
Hey, you will pay your bills. First game, second game, third game. How long would it take to get to the third game? If the third game is probably your heat.
It depends. But obviously you get better at it. You learn what not to do, what to do, you know. Like,
no, but fairly, are you giving yourself 3 years, 5 years?
At this, you know, where we are right now in business, and I guess it also goes back to like when did we realize that we want to branch, split. Because we did so much, we worked on Hot Buns for like 2 years, and we self-funded the whole thing. You know, we did everything ourselves. So it was crazy, and we weren't making money, remember? Mm. And luckily, we were still staying at home.
Right. You know,
we didn't have too many things to worry about. We're still paying salaries and whatever. So then we went into the commercializing or working with businesses, creating products for customers, and we saw that we could leverage some of their clout or some of their audience, because another thing is a lot of South Africans don't know that South Africans make video games.
Right.
And also, how do we teach South Africans? Because we also don't have like a big marketing or PR company that does our gaming, you know? Those are like one of the challenges that we saw. And the international publishers weren't like, they didn't see that we were ready yet. You know? So working with the brands, we saw that we can leverage their brand and still teach people about gaming, and then we can get more people on our side to get games. So those are the type of things that we learn. So in terms of like our next game being a hit, these are the things, these are the lessons that we pick up. We see, okay, who can we work with, what kind of games can we create, you know? And obviously the game has to be fun. And I think the move right now, or what we've picked up or what we've seen in the industry, is that just like how Amapiano blew up,
we need to
make a game that is basically the people bring it up.
Yeah.
You know, the South African market is the one that push it out. And then that's when you're going to like see.
I still don't understand how Hot Buns did not make it, man.
I guess not enough twerking.
Hey! There you go. What is Hot Buns?
It's a game about the origins of twerking.
Do you know what twerking is?
I do know what twerking is.
It's a global phenomena, and that's why we thought it's gonna work, because it's so catchy, it's so easy to promote. You know, we even had a skit where we were twerking. You can check us out on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't want to look at it.
It's pretty funny. I think we were nominated for Savannah Comics Choice Award for that. Yeah, so that's how we were able to cross pollinate.
That's
the
stuff you gotta do.
Right. Tap into like different. We're not comics at all, but you know, we're able to like.
So, if I'm a guy on this game, what do I do?
So it's not like, how do I put it? What we wanted to do was, we wanted to start the conversation. So, we created a whole universe called Batopia, and the people that
Batopia.
Batopia, yeah. And the people that lived there were called Batopians. Oof. And
just clearly a butts. Game made by men.
I'm telling you, man.
And then
I'm loving it though.
Yeah, so we were like questioning what where does this thing come from? Like where is its origins? Yeah, okay. Like I don't believe what I see from like Western media them sexualizing it and linking it to like strip clubs and all of that stuff. Yes. I felt like there's more to it. Just like with everything in life, you know, there's always a second story.
A Genesis story.
Yeah, you know. And then we were like, how do we break that down? You know, like how do we get people talking about it? How do we get people to understand? So we created this whole universe, and in this world, being able to twerk is like equivalent to being a doctor or a lawyer or a judge.
What?
You know, like you rank high in society.
Yeah.
And obviously you gotta have big cheeks for that, you know. And if you don't,
cheeks look
like no, right? Dude, butt cheeks,
man. Butt cheeks.
Oh, hey man,
come on,
I'm loving you. What's your problem? I'm trying to think, why am I twerking with my cheeks? What's going on?
Yeah. So and then for those that don't have the cheeks, you know, they like,
can you build your cheeks?
So this is where the game comes. This is where we brought the thing together. So we created like something called the Booty Olympics, which is like
your. I'm trying to tell you, man.
It's like the Olympics for the Batopians. So for those that don't have the goods, they can participate in this tournament, and they could like make money, and by winning it, you like automatically raise up in society. So you have to compete with other.
You win based off of.
So it's like the Olympics, or it's like it's obstacle course.
Obstacle course for booty.
For booty, yeah. So you
can it fit through a door?
So like I don't know if you guys can put up a trailer, but like
put up a trailer.
We can put it too.
Yeah, you go through like an obstacle course, and it's like you have to like collect the flag, and you have to keep it for a certain amount of time. There's different competitions or games that you have to play. Like there's capture the flag. There's battle royale. There's
what are you battling with?
Battling other Batopians.
With?
Other Batopians.
Oh.
So we designed...
Are you boxing?
No. It's you have to win the Booty Olympics. So you have to finish the obstacle course without dying.
Don't get too stuck into the details.
Anyway, this is an interesting thing. I don't understand.
I'll put the trailer.
Yeah. Okay. But you can get it on Steam, and it's multiplayer as well.
Okay.
And we designed like four different butt types. that actually exist in the world, and we created
in
characters off.
How
of
many
that.
Butt types do you have in South Africa?
I don't know the data, but there's like four main butt types. There's like six, but like there's four main.
He's done his research.
Watched hours and hours of talking videos. And
you watched hours and hours of talking
for the animation for research purposes, you know. So, and it's not fun. Like after the first,
it is not fun.
Two, three videos, you just like stop.
You should have called me into that exercise.
Maybe if we have a reboot, I'll let you know.
Please. Excuse the pun, reboot. Hey! All right, before we go down the rabbit hole on twerking and stuff. So I know you attend the Africa Games Week most years. Yeah, weirdly, I didn't see you this last year in December in Cape Town. But anyway, I know you attend there. So part of the reason I go hang out there because it's the only time or space I can meet up with face-to-face, at least, with other developers from the continent.
For sure.
They come through, and their story is interesting, right? Like, there's guys that are doing the most amazing creative work, and they do shoestring, right? They do. Mm. There's no real ecosystem that supports them. There's winners here and there that come from different backgrounds, and they have means and ways to make things happen. Making an indie game isn't easy anywhere, but the market in which you're building the game does matter. It changes.
Mm.
So, you know, given the context of you're in South Africa, you know, one of the themes that I came up a lot with a lot of the guys I chatted to there was how are they making their stories palatable to the bigger audience, the Western audience. And I don't want to say... When I say Western, I just mean the rest of the world, really. I'm not necessarily meaning the States or Europe or something. Because that's, you know, there's money there. The market's there. But then there's a certain way of representing, air quote, Africa in their particular games that there's always a cliche element to it.
For sure.
And a lot of developers want to get away from it. But in the same time, how do they, you know, in terms of your own work, how are you leveraging your storytelling in your particular games or your themes that you're working with that are palatable to a bigger audience, because that's where you ultimately want to get to. We all want to make money from our work, while at the same time not being inauthentic, or being authentic at the same time while as attracting the bigger audiences, without falling into cliche. Like, I'm using like Wakanda as a typical example. Like, they always get the accent wrong for some reason. The accent's always weird.
Yeah,
it's like, why don't you just have use your own accent? Like, what's the problem? But anyway. I'm going to get canceled for that comment. But anyway, yeah, just tell us how you're thinking about that particular space, because it's complicated.
Yeah. And like I said in the beginning of the podcast, we were steering away from the whole diversity award thing, you know, and that part of it meant that we had to make games of like African descent, or we had to, I don't know, create like games that speak about an African story, a specific African story. And we're not like against that or anything. I think we actually support that, and we appreciate developers that are doing that. But what we wanted to do, we wanted to do something different. We wanted to connect with the rest of the world in ways which we don't dilute ourselves, but also find something that connects us all, because we're all human beings. We all have similar challenges. And like, for example, the game that you interviewed me on, Dopa Dash, which is about waste management and recycling. When we started working on the game and doing research about it, we started off with the guy that pushed the trolleys.
Okay.
So we looked at the human condition, or a problem that faces all of us, which is waste management. You know, how do we solve that problem? That's a global problem. It's found like wherever there's human beings, there's bound to be waste. You know,
yeah.
And how do we create a game that's African but also speaks to the global audience. Yeah, you know. And then we looked home and we looked at the street surface, the guy that pushed the trolleys, and we were like, how do we make a game, a recycling game, about these guys and gamify what they're doing? And then when we started doing research, we learned that you don't only find these people in South Africa, but they found all over the world, in Canada, in India, in Korea, China, like everywhere, you know. Everywhere. The only thing that's different is the race and the trolley that they use, you know, but it's the same game that you can plug everywhere. So that's like the thinking when we create our game. There's this other game that we also made, we had to rebrand it. It was called Horny, but now it's called Ronnie, for like to be more palatable, to be like more accessible to a younger audience.
You call it what?
Horny.
But also,
how do you spell that?
Horny, like there's a dash in between, so it's Horny. It's about rhino poaching.
Oh
yeah, I get it, but obviously in SEO will come up. Everyone thinks it'll just sort of like
sex
game or something. Yeah, that's what we got, you know. So we had to rebrand to Ronnie, you know. It's about rhino poaching and wildlife conservation, and that's a thing, a global problem, you know. Wherever there's animal species that are being endangered, and these animals are found all over the world, how do we create a game that connects, you know? And we make the rhino, the African rhino, the main character, and then we plug in these other animals
where
these countries can connect, you know. So those are like when we create our games, we want to look at how what connects us all, and we develop a game based off that. And we make maybe the main character or one of the characters an African character that has an African story. That way we don't get lost, or we don't dilute ourselves, but we also like include the rest of the world. Yeah,
interesting.
Would you consider yourself like a? I don't put you in that box, but maybe you do. Like a. And by box, I don't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. I just mean to say that's how you're placing yourself in the industry, as a games for change type thing, like a socially conscious game developed studio, or no?
Yes, definitely. I think the track record speaks for itself. You know, I think just also starting out, the challenges that we had, we needed to like stand out and like kind of make a name for ourselves because of the challenges. Being the only black kids at the time, you know, getting these diversity awards, you know, like it felt like people weren't really taking us serious in our craft. So we needed to like speak out. And I think, and we inspired by like hip hop, you know, and I had interviews in the past where I speak about Space Seller Studios as the next hip hop. And now I'm saying we the next Mapiano, because hip hop was created as a response to the civil rights movement, you know, where black people weren't allowed in certain spaces, and you know, and there's all of these racial things happening, and hip hop became now the biggest genre in the world, you know, where even like Korea is making hip hop, everywhere in the world is making hip hop. So we wanted to become that, and we started studying the whole hip hop movement and how they became what they are and how did they build a culture. And that's how, if you look at like some of our skits or some of the things that we started to do to promote ourselves, we were following that trend. And I think we've been successful in that regard because we have a lot of studios coming up now saying, yo guys, if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't have started our studio, you know, we're inspired by you.
Nice.
You know, I think, and that's the mission, that's, we want to build a legacy, you know, for Spacesize Studios, to say that you can make woke games, just don't make them like the, and I think people can abuse like the whole movement, you know, like with wokeism, and you know, if you can really look at where they started and how they turned out, you know, you can see that some people misuse that. So we want to show people that you can talk about certain issues, or maybe you can speak to the gaming community, and because they spend so much time playing games, how do you use that time and convert it into something good for the planet, you know, for their communities, you know. And yeah, so you can, I guess you can classify, even though we've never like won anything for G4C or anything like that, you know. But yeah,
what more stories are you planning to tell through gamifications and games, from a global perspective, from an African perspective? What stories can we expect from you in the future?
Oh, there's a lot, you know. I don't think some I can talk right now because it's still under development. But I think right now we're trying to do more collaborations, where we partner up with like the fashion industry. I haven't seen anything done in that space via gaming, unless you know the easy stuff where they'll put like the guys' apparel in the game. We don't want to do that. We want to take it the next step further, where we connect the fashion world. So I like to call myself like the bridge. I connect the two worlds together because of my understanding and how I see the world. And yeah, so we want to go into like fashion. Okay. We want to go into education. We want to like basically anything that we can like tap into. TV as well, you know, like there's a lot of shows that, especially after working with Tropica, there's a lot of shows that we've seen that we can have like a companion piece where maybe it's a dating show that you're watching and we have a dating game that you can play at home, you know, even YouTube. We speak into the likes of Yo McGee's, you know, Your Last Caesars, to develop games for them, for their products, you know. So, and we always the first to do what we do in the spaces that we occupy. And I think that has always given us leverage. It's just now, how do we speak to those people to make it happen? And the fact that we were able to get Zapiro, I think I'm really excited about the collaborations that are coming up next.
Collaborations are where it's at, in my view.
100%.
Just to get that scale of movement and the regularity of releases.
100%.
In closing, I mean, any advice you have for young up-and-coming game devs? I'll give you some context. You're familiar with the guys at Geek Culture, yeah?
Yes.
So was it last year or the year before? I think it was last year. They did their first like little event in Soweto. They had like a hall event, almost like a Rage or a Comic-Con, you know, type event, but much smaller scale. So I mean, I would say there's growing interest in that sector within that area. Any up and coming advice from yourself, like guys that want to get into the scene or guys that want to build out studios? Or
For me, I always tell people just start. You know, don't waste time thinking about it. Like, if you want to do it, just do it. Like, we did it with no budget, no nothing. Just start. The universe has a way of rewarding people that are brave, you know. I heard you guys speaking about funding. You're definitely going to get it, you know. You just have to stick at it.
Yeah.
So starting is always important. And then, like, identify the people that you look up to and want to be. And try and, like, get close to them, you know. I've always been inspired by Free Lives, you know, from the beginning, with also Nyamakop as well, you know. And it was easier to get to Nyamakop because they were based in Joburg, and you know, they were still young, so wherever there was a conference or whatever, I was there and I was speaking to them and I was getting advice and I would learn about the industry. And for me, I have this saying that if I can't see it or if I can't touch it, it doesn't exist. You know, so until I meet the person, like for example Kanye West, I don't think he exists. until I meet him. And then I'll be like, okay, he does exist. So that's how it is. And once I can touch it, I can see it, I can be it.
Right.
So I always tell people, just get started and find the people that you look up to, you know, learn from them. Even if you can't meet them in person, but read up on them, watch their interviews, get something that's going to inspire you so that you can learn and then you repeat what they do, but better, you know, and how do you do it in your own way.
So where would you say they should start, with a mobile game or like a desktop game, which is easier?
You know, for me, it's all about passion, because the gaming industry is cutthroat. So you could say, I want to go into mobile because it's easier, but if you don't have the passion or if it's not something that you really want to do. We started with a PC game.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't say mobile is necessarily easier. Probably the onboarding and size of the game is smaller, but it's to make a good game is still just as hard.
It's just as hard, yeah.
Okay.
You can make a board game if you're really passionate about it. It's all about passion, you know, because that's what's going to get you through.
Right.
You're not going to get if you want a quick reach scheme or get rich quick scheme, it's not gaming.
So it's hard.
It's hard.
It's not podcasting either, I might add.
Yeah. but
oh, I caught that one.
Yeah, but you just gotta be passionate. Whatever you choose, you just gotta stick with it. You just gotta start and find the people, the right people to do it with.
And if you are in Joburg, what communities can one connect to make sure that they're up to beat with the happenings of the gaming industry?
So there's actually a gaming meetup at the Goethe that's happening today.
Every Thursday.
Every second Thursday of the month.
Okay.
You can check out Samolohong. I don't know if they have like regular events, but they usually post about the events. That's in Braamfontein. And then I know there's a lot of meetups in Cape Town, but you can join like Make Games SA. It's a Discord server that you can check out. They also have meetups every week. And then, you can check us out on SpaceSalad.za. We usually post as well, like events and stuff that we're attending. And the thing about us is we found everywhere. So we're not limited to games. You'd find us at a mining in Daba, or you'd find us at a economics conference. You know, we want to be the bridge that connects gaming. I want to get to a point in my lifetime where I meet old people or people in general, and they're like, when I tell them what I do, they don't say I'm wasting time, I'm playing games. You know, I want them to say, oh, this is a respectable profession, you know. How do I also get involved? So,
nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. That's it from our side. Thanks, dude.
Thank you so much for coming
through.
Thank
you so much, man. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
Thank you so much.
It's been the Angle Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll leave the details in the descriptions below. Please do like, subscribe, and follow us on all social media platforms. Until next time.
See ya.